Hi, you're listening to A Senior Moment, the show for and about seniors. I'm Joanne Rideout. I'm here in the studio with Steve Hawks. He's our guest today. He is in Adult Protective Services with Northwest Senior and Disability Services. And we also have Michelle Lewis in the studio. She's a regular co-host and guest. She's also with Northwest Senior and Disability Services. Hi.
Hi, Joanne. Hello.
Thanks to both of you for being here today.
My pleasure.
We're going to be talking about Adult Protective Services today, what that means, how you might access it, and why someone might need to access it. Steve, this is your bailiwick, so why don't we start with you? What is Adult Protective Services to start with, and how does it compare to Child Protective Services, which most people have probably heard of?
A couple of main differences is children are defined age 1 day through age 18, and I don't deal with anybody under age 18. Child Protective Services, biggest difference between us is most people are aware that Child Protective Services can remove a child from a home. Unfortunately, they get mislabeled as baby snatchers, and that's really too bad because they do such a great job, and it's such a judgment call when they go in a home. Adult Protective Services has no authority to remove an adult from a home. Reason being is once you reach age 18, you have a constitutional right to self-determination. You have a right to make choices, good or bad. As a friend of mine likes to say, you have a right to folly.
Mm-hmm.
So I cannot remove anybody from a home. So I like to tell people, I'm not a granny snatcher.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I come to your door, I'm not there to remove you or your loved one from the home. The only time that's different is if there's a medical emergency. Like anybody, I call 911 and have medics come up. Or if there's a crime in process, I have police show up. Other than that, it's difficult to remove somebody from home. That's your right.
Well, so I think that's a really important point because we, I think people might be concerned about reporting something because they'd be afraid that it would kick in this sort of inexorable process that would end up having the person taken to a facility. So that's a really good point to start with. So what kinds of things do, we're familiar with some of the things that children need to be protected from. What kinds of things fall under your bailiwick in terms of protecting adults?
The rules that govern Adult Protective Services has a half a dozen or so definitions of what we investigate. And they're anything from physical abuse, verbal emotional abuse, self-neglect, sexual abuse, financial exploitation. And people refer these to me all the time. And I investigate in both the community, which is people's homes, and in facilities, which is all of the placements that you're aware of. And I cover all of Clatsop County.
Okay, and it says on your card here that the service, that at least Northwest Senior and Disability Services covers Clatsop, Marion, Polk, Tillamook, and Yamhill counties. Does that mean that this service is available throughout the whole, maybe Michelle, that's a question for you. Is this service available throughout the whole range of Northwest Senior and Disability Services?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, in all our counties and throughout the state and most of the nation.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, the reason you see that is that we're actually an area agency on aging. We're not a state office. And we cover those five counties. That's the counties we're contracted to serve.
Now, just a quick just aside here, we usually have another person in the studio, Doug Schaefer. He's with the Olympic Area Agency on Aging in Washington State. He couldn't be with us today, but he, his agency also can hook people up with Adult Protective Services. How does somebody tell if they should report something? Let's start with that. What kinds of things?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's really kind of an artistic question. Really, it starts simply with a concern. You know, are you concerned about somebody that you know or maybe related to? Something's changed. Maybe they're appearing more confused. Maybe they're disheveled. Maybe they're not taking as good a care of themselves anymore. Maybe the house is becoming unmanageable. Maybe all of a sudden they're writing bad checks. Or there's somebody that's living in the house that is abusing them and you're aware of it. It really starts simply with a concern. Then the thing to do is to call that toll-free number with your concern and let us do what we call screening. Now, your concern may or may not meet Adult Protective Services, but we also may be able to do some other services through our office, in-home services, or anything like that. Just because it doesn't get assigned to me doesn't mean that we're not working on it. So it's important that when I go to somebody's home or to a facility, I'm not being just intrusive, because people will see my first visit sometimes as intrusive, but it also has to have a purpose. You know, I need to have something to really talk to the person about. So that's the screening part. The screener will take your information and what you're concerned about and then determine if I should respond. Now, if you let me continue on with that particular point, I want to let any of you know who may call in a concern to Adult Protective Services that you are kept confidential. We call you're labeled a complainant, and complainants are kept confidential unless the police officer may want to know your name, or if a judge orders me to testify as to who the complainant is. Otherwise, I'm very, very strict about that particular rule, because I want you calling. I want you to be comfortable to know that your uncle or aunt is not going to become aware that you're the one that called in a concern.
Can you give us an example of a case that you've done, that you've dealt with here locally, about, no names of course, but, you know, of the kinds of things that happen?
Well, there's a variety of things. I've been doing adult protective services, all are part of my job, for 16 years. Senior services, case management, a couple of years prior. I have been into hoarder homes. I have been.
And so what does that mean?
Hoarder homes? I don't know if it's ever really truly been defined. I think that the mental health DSM-5 now, I think it is, may have come up with a criteria. The extreme examples are you open somebody's door and stuff just starts falling out. I have been into homes that I have had to crawl up and into because they are so bad.
So lots of clutter.
A lot of clutter. Sometimes there's pathways through the clutter. Sometimes there's not. Mm. And I think what really defines it as a hoarder home compared to just being a mess is that the person living there has some type of a bond with all that stuff, and they don't want to let it go. And even if you successfully get the house cleaned out, within a short period of time, it will be cluttered again. Mm. And again, the person will have an emotional attachment to all of that stuff. If you ever watch Hoarders Buried Alive, that is certainly
that's
good examples.
A TV show. Okay.
Yeah, it is dramatized for sure, but I've been into homes very similar to that. Mm. Then the other things I mentioned, you know, with self-neglect is probably my most common referral. Self-neglect is first identified when a person stops taking care of themselves. I like to use an example of, you know, a lady who all of her life, her hair is perfect, she's always dressed immaculate, always bathed, always cleaned, etc. And pretty soon you see a strand of hair out of place, or a little disheveled, or you can pick up a urine odor or something like that. Maybe losing some weight, maybe seeming a little confused. These are kind of signs that there could be a self-neglect issue. I will get that referral, and I will go to the home. And there's two really important elements to self-neglect. One is there a risk of harm to the person? And usually there is some kind of risk of harm, otherwise it doesn't get assigned to me. The other element is, do they understand what's going on with them and that it's possibly harmful? And that's important. That's the cognitive piece, because we all have a right to make bad choices, good or bad. Mm. We talked about this before the show. Until you've lost the capacity to make those choices, or you no longer understand those choices. Now, it's important for me as a protective service worker to make sure there's no medical reason for that, such as a urinary tract infection, maybe a recent loss and there's serious grieving, maybe there's other hormonal issues, you know, so I'm going to be asking, when's the last time you saw a doctor? Are you willing to go see a doctor? And some of those type of things, not being on your correct thyroid medicine can cause issues. So there's things for me to look at. But the end result is, if I have a true self-neglect case, that means that there's not only a risk to the person, but they no longer have the ability to make informed choices, which is a constitutional right. Then I have to seek somebody to petition the court for guardianship. And a few shows back, we talked about that. And it's the most restrictive form of intervention there is. when I make a suggestion that a guardian petition, I am very, very certain that that person needs that level of protection, because the person essentially loses their civil rights.
Mm.
You know, the guardian is making those decisions because the person no longer can. And these are extreme conditions. I often will tell people, the folks that wind up with a guardian, they still believe that Franklin Delano Roosevelt is the president.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they just no longer have the ability to function in society.
Right.
So they need a decision maker. So this is not willy-nilly getting a guardian. And I think most of us who do this for a living knows 30 years ago, guardianships were handed out pretty regular. Judges are very strict now. You know, they don't just say, okay, we have, okay, I have a guardian. You got to meet the criteria.
So I think it's a good thing, it just was occurring to me to say this, so I'll say it, that your services are designed to help people, not to punish them. You know, so if someone comes into the home, they're coming there to help you with get help that maybe you can't get for yourself. Maybe your family just doesn't know how to access it, or maybe you're afraid you can't afford it. There are a lot of things that people can get that are free or are related to your income. So don't feel that. I mean, I think it's a great opportunity if you could, so people can look at this as an opportunity to get help that they may really need. That's a great way to look at it, and that's your intent, obviously.
Well, when people hear first just the protective services piece, protective services, they may not hear the adult protective services. They immediately think of child protective services.
Right.
So when we look at adult protective services, most of us who do what I do, we're really a conduit to get services for a person if they want them.
Right.
Doesn't mean that they have to take them. If I go to Jane Henry's home and there's problems there, I will offer services. Whether they're free or not is really not something I can determine, but I make a services referral that then goes into our services part of our office. And then there's staff there that specialize in determining what the person needs. Will there be a cost? Do we have other avenues of support for the person? Are there family that can be informal support? Sometimes family don't want to deal with their elder parents anymore, and they're not available. That's sad to say. I'm not here to judge anybody's family dynamics. There could have been stuff happened long ago. A case manager was back in 98 in the Dalles, and there was an older fellow who was blind. No family, no nobody.
Mm.
You know, wow. Gut-wrenched me, you know.
Yeah.
And after he passed away, I learned a little bit more about him and some of the family issues that went on decades prior. So it's not my job to judge family. It's my job to make sure that people get the services. And now as an elder abuse investigator, it's my job to make sure that they're safe in their own homes, can stay in their own homes as long as possible. And are free from abuse unless they choose to stay in the cycle, which, if anybody knows domestic violence, abuse can be cyclic.
Mm. Well, I just want to take a minute to remind everybody that you are listening to A Senior Moment, the show for and about seniors. I'm your host, Joanne Rideout. I'm here in the studio with Michelle Lewis from Northwest Senior and Disability Services, and we've just been talking with Steve Hawks, who is also with Northwest Senior and Disability Services. He is an adult protective services worker, and we're talking about this important work in the community where this service helps elders who need help, but doesn't force it on them, makes options available to them. So, Steve, to continue, I know from doing this show for a number of years that Northwest Senior and Disability Services and the Olympic Area Agency on Aging have a huge spectrum of services that are available that people tend to not know about. So it sounds like really your job is to connect people with those services then.
Well, I'm a specialist. I'm not a generalist, so my specialty is elder abuse investigations, and as a result of those contacts, I oftentimes will make service referrals when the people I'm helping want that, and I've been around for a while. I've been in this county, well, my whole life, other than a couple of years at the Dalles, so a lot of people know me, and they call, and I usually am able to make a services referral if they choose. But anything from in-home services to Medicaid help to live in assisted living facilities, senior companions, which are difficult because as a volunteer, so there's all kinds of things that our office can really help with, food stamps, et cetera.
So just to sort of take a, maybe like a what-if scenario. So things that we've talked about on the show are people needing help with taking medications, people needing help getting rides places, people needing help going to doctor visits. Those are the kind of things that family members can be overwhelmed with. And the people may not, who as they get older and decreased ability to get around on their own or drive. So are these the kinds of things that people, you can get services through? So if somebody's listening to this and going, wow, I work so much, I don't have time to help my mom with her medication, or I don't have time to take her to the doctor, or I don't have... So are those the kinds of things? That's basic everyday things.
I'll feed this over to Michelle in a second, but when you mention the medication management, a lot of times self-neglect, one of the signs is a person's not taking their medications correctly.
So maybe
I'll get
remember.
Calls on that, and that's pretty serious stuff, because a lot of medications anymore are life-saving types of meds. So when somebody's forgetting to take their meds or mismanaging them, get calls from doctors, home health, hospice, and family members who get concerned about that. But your question about services would be better answered by Michelle.
Okay. Yeah, so any of his visits may turn out to a referral to our agency. And what we would be doing then is screening to see what services are available. So that might be something like options counseling, what kind of long-term care is out there, how much does it cost, would you be in a situation where you could pay privately, or would you be looking at possible Medicaid helping you out. There are some other community resources available. There's a group through Providence that does some transportation but using volunteers. So, yeah, we would screen you for all those things. Sometimes you need help with Medicare. I mean, you didn't have, maybe you aren't taking medications because you don't have a Part D prescription drug plan. You know, we can help see if that's possible to get them onto a plan and help them with those costs. So, yes,
okay.
You start off with, if you start off with Steve, he'll make the referral back over. It works the other way, too, that if we're working with somebody and we see a high-risk situation that we need help with, we'll coordinate with Steve and just either make a referral to it or get some advice about how to proceed to avoid any more risk in the home.
So it seems like one important thing for people to remember is that when Adult Protective Services is invoked on somebody's behalf, it's really to help them, and that the worst thing that can happen is that they can just say, no, I don't want the help.
You know, that's actually a theme throughout our agency. Our agency is there to support people's choice.
Mm-hmm.
And so to support their choice and their independence. And so from all aspects, all angles that come into our agency, we want to support that person's ability to be independent and to make the choices that they want to make to the extent that they can make them. And so that's true in Adult Protective Services or any one of our other programs.
So,
to say also that, you know, when I go to a person's home, they're usually apprehensive, at least sometimes scared.
Oh, sure. Yeah, sure.
You know, Protective Services, oh my God, what did I do wrong? And nothing. You know, I mean, nobody, the reported victim hasn't done anything wrong. And usually I get to a point where I let them know that my job is really to make sure you're safe in your own home and you can stay in your own home as long as possible. Because that's what all of us want. You,
right.
Me, Michelle.
Right, sure.
You know, I don't want to have to leave my home. I don't want to have to be forced out of my home. And I let people know that's not my job. I cannot remove you from your home. I want you to be safe and in your own home as long as possible. I think all the evidence over the years have shown that people recover from medical illnesses better in their own home. You know, they're happier. You know, most of us have that desire.
So a lot of what we've been talking about here are, you know, issues where adults are vulnerable because of maybe self-neglect, maybe they're just getting older and they can't handle the things they used to handle. Their family members can't handle it either because they're overwhelmed. So these are sort of sincere problems that don't involve wrongdoing, intentional wrongdoing. But what about if you go, I mean, we talked a little bit before the show about people being victims of theft and, you know, their bank accounts being drained and things that are crimes. Mm-hmm. So when you encounter something like that, that's a different animal. How do you deal with that?
Well, let me first talk about rule. When I get a referral and there's a possibility there's a crime, and actually it's likely there's a crime, I'm required to cross report to the police I'm not a criminal investigator. Probably the best way to describe me is I'm a social services detective. You know, I don't investigate crimes. So if the incident rises to a level of crime, I fax whatever law enforcement office has jurisdiction. Sometimes they go together, sometimes not. It depends on the nature of the crime. Let's take physical abuse, which most people will see as somebody hitting someone or assault. That's a two-hour response for me. It's also an immediate cross report to law enforcement because they're probably going to get there faster than I am. If there's something going on at the time, the law enforcement officer will arrest one of the people, probably. But my job is to kind of, after the assault happens, find out what happened and how we can help that reported victim be safe again. What do they need? Is the perpetrator living with them? Do they want that perpetrator out of the house? I got to tell you, probably 7 times out of 10, the victim doesn't want the perpetrator out of the house.
Because they may not have anyone else to help them if that person goes.
Yes, or they love them or for whatever reason. And I can't make any choices for that victim. It's up to them. All I can do is offer the interventions. You know, if you decide you don't want that person in the home, there's an eviction process. Safe harbor can help you with a restraining order. There's some resources out there to help that person. Other things, financial exploitation is one of the things. This is a hard one for me because more often than not, the perpetrator is a family member.
Wow.
And let's say Michelle is the victim and her grandson is the perpetrator. I've had cases where the victim has come right out and said, grandson's going to inherit it anyway. I don't care. I've had him say that with the sheriff's deputy there.
Wow.
It's, you know, there's a constitutional issue of the perpetrator being able to confront their accuser in a court of law. So if Michelle's not willing to be a victim, it's really hard to prosecute. Now, if Michelle's totally demented and she doesn't have the ability to make that decision, then law enforcement and the DA's office can determine if they can follow through with the case. More often than not, I think family members of the perpetrator. It can be anything from theft of drugs, theft of money, theft of items, any type of issue that causes financial distress to the victim. In a facility, theft of medications comes to me as a financial exploitation matter because it costs money for those drugs. So there are things like that. And then we get to probably the hottest button topic of any financial crime, and that's scams.
Okay.
And scams, they have a financial impact, but because scams generally originate overseas, Ghana, Australia, some African nation, there's little that I or local law enforcement can really do about that. So they now come to me as self-neglect. In other words, and I'll just use Michelle because she's sitting here. Michelle is then sending thousands of dollars in hopes to get this person from Africa over to here to help take care of her, be her husband, whatever, and only to find out she's been scammed. So my job at this point is to determine whether or not Michelle has that capacity to make those decisions with her money, because we get to spend our money how we choose. If you want to sit in front of a poker machine all day long and squander your Social Security check, that's your own business. But do you understand that you're harming yourself? That becomes my business. I work closely with the Department of Justice on scams. When I go out on them, I send them the information because the Department of Justice can usually find where the origin of the scam is. Occasionally, we'll find the origin in the United States, but not usually. And I don't know where those go from there. An interesting development that's been recent is two of the scam referrals I've gotten have actually had go-betweens, money launderers in the United States. And the real interesting part is it's not so much sending money anymore. I have a victim who the scammer had them go buy iPads, iPhones, and send those to the go-between. And then those things would get sold. So here you think, I'm just buying an iPad.
Another one of the scams that we hear over and over for so many years, and still happening, because it just happened in our family recently, is that grandparent scam. The person I know got a call from, he thought he was his grandson, but he stated he knew his grandson's name, he knew a little bit about him, and then said he was in trouble in another state and needed help, and could he ship him money?
That's pretty common, especially with people on Facebook who, and we love to give information, and all somebody has to do is log into your Facebook page, see who you're related to, find a way to call you.
Wow.
And all of a sudden, you get this message, I'm in Italy, I got sick, I'm in the hospital, can you send me money? People tend to be trusting. You know, people don't think, maybe I should call my grandson's parents, my daughter, and see if he is really in Italy. You know, and they don't. Then pretty soon they're sending money, and once you get in that loop of a scam, it's not just really a sweetheart scam is another one that has become pretty popular. I know a person that's totally hooked, sending a person of the opposite sex money, thinking that person's going to move to the United States, marry them, take care of them. People tend to be lonely, and Facebook has become a conduit for some of this stuff. I did some research on that particular scammer. The person was using a picture of a journalist from the Midwest, but the scam originated in Jamaica. But they grabbed that guy's picture off the internet when that's what that person was sending. So
wow. And so in this kind of a case, it's a crime, but there's probably no chance of any restitution.
Well, I mean, yeah, once you send money overseas, you'll never see it again. So the thing is to stop it. If you're bleeding money overseas now, stop it. Then you're not going to collect that $15 million inheritance that somebody left you that you ever never met in your life. There's probably 30 active scams right now. I just want to encourage people to go to the Oregon Department of Justice website. Just look up Oregon Department of Justice. Ellen Rosenblum has a place for you to read about these scams. You can sign up for the scam alert system. Do anything you can to protect yourself. You know, make sure that your bank, you know, banks are really good protectors if they want to be. Talk to your banker about it. That's where I get most of these referrals from scams from, is from the banks.
From the banks.
Yeah. Get a good answering machine, screen your calls.
Yeah.
You know, if you're really susceptible, if your family's concerned about, let all your calls go into your voicemail. Anybody who really wants to talk to you that's important is going to leave you a message,
right,
tell you who they are.
Well, we are coming to the end of our time on the show, and I want to do some contact information. I have a number here for you, Steve, but do you just want to talk about how people should get a hold of you?
Sure. Go ahead. Yeah, let me point out, too, those of you who are kind of internet nuts, there was an article in February 5th, Daily Historian, about elder abuse. That's a pretty good article for you to read if you'd like to go historically. When you call that toll-free number, 800-846-9165, you may get a voicemail. Please leave a message including your name and phone number, and you will get a call back shortly. If you get to speak right away to one of our screeners, they're going to ask you a variety of questions. Please answer them all if you can. Give a good description of what your concern is so that they know where the referral needs to go. And then, depending on the nature of the allegation, I either respond within 2 days or within 5 business days. If you're the complainant calling, you'll probably hear from me that same day or the next day.
Okay. Michelle, can you give just overall contact info for Northwest Senior and Disability Services?
Yeah, it's just to go ahead and call our office. So that's in Warrenton, kind of behind Costco next to the animal shelter. And the phone number there is 503-861-4200.
Okay, and was there more info that you want?
There is a website.
Oh, the website, of course.
Yeah,
right.
So it's nwsds.org.
Okay, and I just want to talk a little bit about the Washington side of things. Doug Schaefer, who's usually with us, isn't with us this month. I hope he'll be back next time. He is the Olympic Area Agency on Aging. He works for them, and contact number for them. They are another broad spectrum agency of resources like Northwest Senior and Disability Services, but just in Washington. So you can reach them in Long Beach, Washington at 888-571-6558. You can reach them in Raymond, Washington at 888-591-6557. And you can find them online on their website at o3a.org. You've been listening to A Senior Moment, the show all about seniors. I'm Joanne Rideout. Thanks so much to Michelle Lewis and Steve Hawks. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you very much
for being here today. And thanks to everyone for listening. And we'll see you next time on A Senior Moment.